Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. There are three theories.
You are. I love how excited you are. You just love research so much.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
Species will evolve to minimize competition.
With Margaret Aples
and Amy Wilson. A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And this week we're talking about how can our kids be such total opposites?
How does it happen? Amy knows because she loves to research. She loves to get you guys the answers, but she went way down the rabbit hole and she's been texting me for like 3 days with fun facts and excited emojis about how excited she is about her research.
What I love about doing this podcast is I get to research things that I actually want to know about, right? Like this is just a question that yes. I wondered and we hoped that there'd be interesting research to answer the question, and there totally is. I was even telling my husband and daughter about it last night at dinner. Like, where do you hear this?
You're on fire about this topic. You're like, everyone, listen.
It's opposites. Fascinating. Because you have said that you and I were apparently made in opposite-making machines.
On many topics.
On many topics.
And so in some ways, we're similar, but there are definitely opposite-making machines, especially our feelings about capers. Let's not go back into it because that was a painful chapter for us.
So let me just start by asking, was it true in your family of origin that you and your siblings were completely polar opposites in certain ways?
Yes.
Me too. And how about in your kids, your own children? Are they completely, how did they come from the same family? Opposites?
Yes. In some ways, of course. I mean, there are similarities, but yes, personality traits and likes and dislikes and temperament, there is some major oppositeness going on.
And is it so opposite that even people outside your family will comment on it?
Yes, it is.
Like teachers, right?
Growing up, my sister was a year and 11. She hasn't gotten any older or younger, but she's a year and 11 days older than I am, one grade ahead of me all through school. And I was on the losing side of that opposite making machine dynamic in that my sister was like high achieving and well behaved, and I was not. I almost can't believe you're Kate's sister. And I was like, yeah, that's fun for me.
So the first thing I wanted to look at is, so is this really a thing or is this just something we all like to say and think, but it's not really true?
Right. Anecdotal evidence, as we say.
Right. Well, it turns out it's really true. So in the 1980s, there was a doctor named Dr. Robert Plowman, and he studies behavioral genetics. He published a paper that was very influential saying that we can look at siblings and their similarities in three different ways. Do they look alike? Are their IQs similar? And are their personalities similar? And in each of these ways, he compared groups of siblings to each other and to people randomly plucked from the population. So in terms
of method, I like it.
So in terms of physical similarity, siblings, even siblings who you wouldn't think look that much alike, still look more like each other than they do like random samplings. Makes sense. IQ, same thing. Your IQ is going to be much more likely to be similar to your siblings and similar to some person down the street.
Okay.
Your personality traits, like how competitive you are, how outgoing you are, things like that, are a little more similar than children taking it random from the population, but not much more.
That's interesting.
So you're only a little more like your siblings than Samranda.
So you look like them and you're smart or dumb like them, but other things get much more random.
But personality is almost completely separate. And so he sort of had research to prove that's true. It's not perception. It is actually true. Then the question becomes, why is it that being raised in the same family pushes children in opposite directions in terms of personality?
I want to know the answer to that question, Amy.
There are three theories.
I love how excited you are. You just love research so much.
There are three theories, and I have to give a hat tip to an NPR reporter named Alex Spiegel. I found a NPR story where she broke down these three theories, and then, of course, I went and, you know.
I'm only sad for you that this can't involve a PowerPoint because it's audio only.
I am going to take this show on the road, people. This is
with your laser pointer and be like, you guys, four nights only at the Palladium, Amy's PowerPoint on opposites.
Why are our children such total opposites? Yes, they are.
Okay, so before we launch into your three things, let's just go with anecdotal stuff first.
Okay.
My siblings and I are all quite tall, except for one of us. There's a runt of our litter. My sister, who was the smarty pants, who everyone compared me to, is smaller than the rest of us.
Can't have everything.
And we're a freakishly tall family. Like my brother's kids, he has four kids, and they're all close to or over 6 feet tall. They're just very tall people. And so my sister is an opposite in that she's a shorty pants.
Psychologists say that in, among siblings that are very closely spaced, we both grew up that way and have kids that are that way. I have a sibling that's 16 months younger than me. I have kids that are 19 months apart.
I got you beat. My siblings and I are all almost exactly 1 year apart.
And I have sisters who they call Irish twins that are actually less than a year apart. I have sisters who are the same age.
Well, my sister and I are very close to being. Irish twins are less than a year apart. My sister and I are a year and 11 days apart.
Yeah, there are 6 days a year where my two sisters are the same age.
God bless you, Nancy Wilson.
Yes, exactly. So siblings that close in age, there's a process that they call de-identification. And that the sort of opposite-making machine really kicks into serious gear among siblings that are that close in age, particularly if they're same-sex.
This could have been written about my family and is about us. I mean, it's exactly. So I have an older brother, older sister, and myself, all born in 3 years. Older brother, like very much like first child. You know how they say, I don't know, like if there's been 45 presidents, like 35 of them or something are first children. Like he's that guy. He's like straight and narrow, high-achieving, very bright, excellent in school, you know, all that stuff. But then my older sister is also that way. She's straight and narrow, high achieving, went to a great school, great grade, student council, like, blah. And then I was the opposite making machine kid. And I was like, and again, I mean, looking back, like I made it through just fine, but I was not a great student. And I was kind of obstinate in how much I was not about being a great student. Like it was definitely something that I almost prided myself in as a youth.
You were probably much more likely to de-identify with your very closely older sister than she was to her very closely older
brother.
Correct.
So since the first one was a boy, she didn't need to de-identify.
Already pretty different.
Second girl, I had to de-identify from her because I was the third.
Yeah.
We were functionally triplets, basically.
And I have two sons who are 19 months apart, same sex. And so, yeah, you can just count on the younger guy to pick a different
lane.
Everything. Pick a different lane. And I used to say, before researching this episode, I was always took great pride in how we had helped them find separate interests and, you know, find their own path so they wouldn't be in competition with each other.
And now you're like, rut-row, Scoobs. I made a mistake.
No, not that I made a mistake, but that really wasn't, that was totally going to happen anyway. Right. It would have happened with or without my intervention.
Well, this whole podcast goes back to my lump of clay theory, which is like, you imagine getting a baby, like, oh, lump of clay for me to form, and then you get a baby and you're like, oh, this is really nothing like
lump
of clay.
Not so much.
Much more like a human who just does what they want.
So are you ready for the three reasons why psychologists think this might be happening and they're actually kind of fighting and maybe all three?
I'm not as ready as you are to tell me, but I'm ready enough.
I'm going
to
hit you with the first theory. It's the theory of divergence that comes from Darwin's Origin of Species.
Oh, okay.
So Darwin studied on the Galapagos Island, he studied finches. He saw 14 kinds of finches on the Galapagos Island that he originally thought had to be 14 different bird families because they were so remarkably different, beak size and shape and, you know, coloring and whatever, completely different. But then was able to discern that they all came from the same bird. why? And there has to be a reason that nature would have that happen. It doesn't just happen because there's a biological imperative for that. So he came up with the theory of divergence, which says that species will evolve to minimize competition. So in other words, these kinds of finches, they started to develop different beak sizes so they could eat different sized nuts and seeds and things. So they weren't all competing for the same food source. And they weren't obviously thinking about doing this. It just happened over time.
Right. You go, finches.
And so there's a psychologist named Dr. Frank Selloway, and we've actually talked about him before in our birth order episode. He wrote an essay on why siblings are like Darwin's finches. He explains that children also do this too, that they have to evolve adaptively, that they're competing for resources, they're competing for parental attention. Siblings will start to behave differently from one another to have enough resources for everybody. Not that they're thinking about doing that, but if one kid is going to be, I'm good at school, then the other kid is going to pick something else to be good at.
Yes. And literally, my mom used to say to me when I was little, you eat like someone's going to take the food away. And I still, like, I remember I was dating a guy who was an oldest kid and from a different country where I guess they had better manners than me. But we would go out to dinner. We would be chatting away. The food would come. I would put my head down and like eat my dinner and look up. And he was like on his second bite of like slowly considered food. I'm like, I was the youngest of the litter. Like I had to eat fast.
Yeah, it's a thing. So your older sister was smarty pants at school. You were gonna pick something else.
Right. I was going to diverge. I was going to be the theory of divergence.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of...
I was going to choose obnoxious and surly. That's what I went with. Didn't go that well for my mom.
And look where it's brought you.
Look, here I am.
So this totally makes sense to me. I think that okay. is a reasonable explanation for some of it. So the second theory is something that psychologists call non-shared environment. And this gets to the root of everybody always saying, how could these kids be so different? They grew up in the same house. They had the same parents. Like, you know, that whole thing we like to right. say. That basically we're wrong. That a shared environment only appears shared and it's not. So siblings don't really share the same environment. We just think they do. And that explains the difference.
I need more of an explanation. I don't understand.
Dr. Selloway would say, like, you can't say that the firstborn child grew up in the same household as the thirdborn child. They didn't, because the firstborn child had the experience of being an only. And the third child only ever has the experience of being the third or the youngest. So you had the experience of being alone. What do they say? Children are like pancakes. You screw up the first one more than the rest. That there's a level of positive attention and negative hovering that goes with your first that doesn't go with the rest of the kids.
Yes, and we did, for the record, do an episode on birth order that has a lot of really interesting stuff.
Yes.
So go check out that episode as well, because we dive really deeply into this topic. And my mom was a therapist and she kind of specialized in birth order. And you like to think like, oh, birth order, it's kind of a made up science. Listen to this episode. That stuff is so dead
it's
on.
So real. So we're parenting each child differently based on their birth order, sometimes without realizing it. And also you respond differently. A baby who smiles and giggles a lot is probably going to get more parental interaction than a baby who's not as interactive.
Absolutely. And a child that mirrors somehow your own negative traits, you're going to react more negatively to. Like, there's a lot going on interpersonally with each one of your kids.
This goes on a little bit of a depressing, like, mother birds pecking the weakest baby bird to death kind of stuff.
We won't hover too long in the mother birds pecking the weakest bird to death. You know, if you have a kid who struggles, it's natural to kind of favor their needs over the needs of your other kids. Dangerous trap, hard not to do, but you almost can't not do it. If you have a kid who has an extremely special talent and that talent becomes kind of a focus as they, you know, start heading for the Olympics in their sport or whatever, or becomes a fantastical violinist or whatever, that's going to change the dynamic in the family. There's so many factors that makes it a non-shared environment.
Right, right. And then you bring up an interesting one. Like, as the kids get older, of course their environments get less shared, because I have one daughter who's at ballet 3 days a week, and I have one child who's at soccer 3 days a week, and they're in a different environment, literally, and it's shaping them in different ways. So as your kids pick divergent interests and spend more time in these divergent interests, not so shared.
And the idea of non-shared environment is not a negative or a positive in this context, right? I mean, it's not saying that non-shared environment is not, it's just an absolute, basically.
It's just basically saying the idea that there is a shared environment is a fallacy.
Interesting. Yeah.
So stop wondering how they could have been raised in the exact same environment and be so different. It wasn't at all the exact same environment.
And there's no goal to try to make their environment more similar. It's just sort of like realize that kids are different because their environment is not as shared as you think it is.
Right. This is not coming from the point of view of how to be a better parent. It's just trying to answer scientifically the question of how can siblings be so different? They can be so different because they were raised differently, is this argument. The other thing that's a part of this non-shared environment is the research talks about events that occur in a family, you know, a parent's illness, a divorce, a sibling's illness, and the ages at which the siblings experience those events is also completely different. If your parents split up when you're 5 versus 12, that's going to shape you completely differently.
Absolutely. And there's a million examples of that. And in my own family, my father is one of 6 siblings, and they lost their mother in a very tragic way at an early age. And my dad was, I think, out of college at the time, but his youngest sibling was 11. And it's like the effect that that had on them was understandably quite different. And like, there's a million examples of how things just happen to you differently depending on the age you are.
Right. This makes sense too, doesn't it? That your shared environment is maybe not so shared. I mean, certainly for me, I'm the oldest of 6 siblings. My youngest sibling is 19 years younger than me. It's literally not a shared environment. I didn't live at home anymore when he was born.
Exactly. We have this in my father's family where there's an age gap of close to that, maybe 20 years. And my dad will say to his youngest sister, oh, you know, when we were kids, and she always stops him and says, we were never kids. Huh. When you were a kid, I was yet to be born for another 16 years. Like, it's not, we weren't kids. There's no such thing.
And I could see firsthand with my parents. My parents had me in their 20s and my youngest brother in their 40s. And of course, you're a totally different parent. You know, they were so laid back with the youngest, with bedtimes and, you know, letting them watch stuff or letting them go places or whatever. It was a completely different dynamic that I could see playing out in real time. And not better or worse, but definitely different.
But non-shared, that's for sure.
It was hella non-shared. So the third theory is something that we actually can do something about. And so I'm going to tell you what the third theory is right after this. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For Trusted Protection Trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Then redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
What people really think about the number of children you have, from the What Fresh Hell podcast. No kids.
When are you two going to have a baby already? Don't wait too long.
One kid.
When are you two going to have another baby already? Don't wait too long.
One boy, one girl.
You must be so relieved. One of each. You can stop now.
Two girls.
Are you going to try for a boy?
Two boys.
You must be so scared that if you try for a girl, you're going to get another boy.
Three kids.
Whoa. You've got your hands full there, Mama, huh?
Four kids.
I think they must be religious.
Five kids.
The minivan is now full. It's time to stop procreating.
Six kids.
When does your reality show premiere?
This has been What People Really Think About the Number of Children You Have from the What Fresh Hell podcast. Amy, how great was your FabFitFun box?
It's very fun. I get my second cup of coffee after the kids are in school and I open the box and it's just for me. It's me, my moment.
It's just for you. I mean, how often, guys, do you do something that you can truly say is just for you? This is a super fun box. And even if the kids crowd around, like when we get a box at the door, the kids are like, who's it for? Who's it for? This one's for you, guys.
It's FabFitFun. Mom fun.
FabFitFun is our sponsor this week, and they are a seasonal subscription box with full-size beauty, fitness, wellness, and home products. It retails for $49.99, but always has a value of over $200.
It's a lot of stuff. When you become a member each season, so four times a year, you get a box filled with 8 to 10 things. It's a really wide range of stuff. And you can, if you want, choose which products you get and which add-ons you want. Or you can just say, omakase, surprise me, FabFitFun box.
Omakase.
I like to control most things, but with my FabFitFun box, I'm just like, whatever you think, FabFitFun,
whatever
it always
you
works
guys
out.
Think. It frees Amy's control freak. I mean, come on. What better endorsement do you need? Guys, use the code MOTHERHOOD for $10 off your first box at FabFitFun.com.
That's FabFitFun.com and use the code MOTHERHOOD for $10 off your first box.
Okay, Amy, hit us with the third theory.
Okay, the third theory that psychologists have come up with to explain why siblings in the same family are so completely opposite is comparison. And here's
We're
it
familiar.
Might be our fault a little bit. Okay.
A little bit.
So per this argument, families are comparison machines that take the differences between kids and completely exaggerate them and reinforce them.
Correct.
If not fully create them, but really lean into them. So if one kid is super friendly and the younger sibling is not quite as outgoing, that kid becomes the shy one, even if in the real world they're not that shy. They're just shy compared to the older sibling, that we have this need to go 180 on it and be like, you're such opposites. One is so friendly and one is so shy.
Well, yes. And this is, I mean, I was alluding to this when I was making the comparison between myself and my siblings as like, my siblings were hyperachievers and I was kind of the, you know, black sheep, the one, you know, the bad student. Like, you know, I went to a pretty good 4-year college. Like I graduated from high school. Like I did laugh with my mom quite a bit as an adult and just would say like, every family should have me as the black sheep. Like I was in any other family, I would have been considered like the standout star. But in my family, I was like, only got a B on that one test. Like my brother and sister never, they were those kind of kids where they were like, we had to raise the score above 100 to measure how great they are. Like, and the fact that I got 85s was like, oh, God, an 85. it was hardly like I was like getting D's, you know? I mean, I was pretty straight and narrow.
Right. And so, but we lean into as family units and relatives and teachers and everything. Like I said, oh, you're such opposites. You're so different from your sister. I mean,
yes.
You know, you're maybe 15 degrees rotated from your sister, but it's sort of, you know, blown up. My mother had 7 siblings growing up.
Man, you Wilsons have been, as my grandpa Billy Mack would say, you've been begetting and begetting.
There's a lot of us. So that these were the Fergusons. And so my uncle Marty, who's now, you know, a grandparent several times over, he was, you know, he was the quote unquote bad kid of the family. And again, that was relatively speaking, but he would sometimes, when my mother was already out of the house, she would, you know, come over to visit. And he would be sitting on the porch and he would tell my mother that, like, this was it. Like, this time he was going to St. Michael's School for Boys, that it was really, Nana was, you know, my Nana was just inside packing up, and, you know, his departure for the school for boys was imminent. And he never actually did anything that warranted him having to go to a school for boys. But that was his role in the family. That
my Texas husband refers to that as East Jesus Junior College. And it's like, oh man, I failed this test so bad. I'm going to East Jesus Junior College.
So there's a study about kind of exactly what you were saying about, like, I'm the dumb one, except not so much. There was a study, Dr. Alex Jensen from Brigham Young and Dr. Susan McHale from Penn State. So they looked at 380 teenage siblings, first and second born. So that's right where I am now with my two oldest and their parents. And they asked the parents which sibling was better in school. And the majority of the parents said the firstborn was better at school, even though on average the siblings' achievements were about the same.
Ugh. That's interesting and kind of disheartening.
Kind of disheartening. And if you ask these child's parents which child was going to do better in the future, they'd say the firstborn one.
Oh, no.
And that they could track a small but definitive decline in GPA in the following year for the second kid.
Oh, my God. That is really depressing.
Yeah, it is. And it's certainly true in my family. Like my oldest is really smart. His brother is also really smart. But the oldest has that like hyperdrive overachiever, you know, seventh gear. He likes to kick things in. Wonder where he got that from. And
no idea. Must have licked it off the sticks and stones, as my grandma Conroy used to say.
And you can mistake that for intelligence, which it's not. It's just I can say it because I have it, a special kind of sickness that you can just never stop. But yeah, that you can actually affect the outcome of siblings' achievements by your belief system, by the parents' belief systems. And then even effects that are that small, like the next year, it was a sort of a 0.2 difference in a GPA from the year before. But over time, you're going to create different outcomes for your children by believing that these roles exist.
I'm going to speak against this because that is my job. Yes, this is probably true. And it's really interesting. And we should lean out of roles. But I hate stuff that is like, bad things that happen to your kids are your fault because of things you are doing unintentionally. This is what I will say in contrast to that. I believe that may be true. I believe that you should be very wary of, like, this one's so picky, he never eats anything. Oh, he's not the good student. You know, yes, don't do that kind of stuff. But the story of my siblings and I is that my brother was kind of a straight and narrow guy, went to an Ivy League school, became a lawyer, had 4 kids very young. Those kids are all very high achievers, all going to Ivy League schools themselves. Great. My sister, same thing, went to college, went to an Ivy League school, chose a little bit more of an artistic career, and has kind of wended her way through that and does extremely well, but is not, you know, a captain of industry. I kind of muddled through the whole way in my own crazy way, ended up going to a decent, great 4-year college, and then had this really dopey artistic career where I kind of wended around and sometimes made a lot of money, sometimes didn't make a lot of money. And if you lined the 3 of us up as an adult and you interviewed each one of us for an hour without just going to total markers of like which better school did you go to or not, I would defy you to define which one of us was the better student in elementary school.
Well, that's a really interesting point. And
you couldn't do it. I don't believe you could. And I'm leaving out my little sister who also went to a grade school, slightly artsy, but more businessy career. Like, I don't think that these things matter as much as we think we do. I think all of the stuff is super interesting. And I think the idea that, like, if you lean in too much to your definition of your children, you can kind of skew the way they turn. Interesting to keep in mind, but don't live or die on these dopey statistics.
I take the other side of that.
Go for it.
I think siblings are going to make themselves into opposites and put themselves in the opposite making machine, and that's completely natural. And we're not going to try to stop that from happening. But when that opposite making machine turns one of the siblings into the less than one or the black sheep or whatever, I think there's things we can do to push back against that a little bit.
I agree. I agree in the context that we often, in having these conversations, imagine that the child is on board a motorboat that you are at the helm of. And I prefer the metaphor that your child is the sailboat and you are the wind. Like, you cannot affect that much, you know? I don't mind having this conversation in the context of, like, the sailboat and the wind, but in the context of, like, I'm driving them around in a motorboat, I think it gets too oppressive and crazy.
Well, after this, I'm going to tell you what Dr. Jensen specifically suggests that you should do for this. He's the guy who did the study on how the second born kid is going to do less well in school because you think they will, and what you can do to counteract that.
All right. Come save us, Sammy.
I'll tell you in a minute.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Okay, so we were talking about Dr. Alex Jensen from Brigham Young, who did the study showing that parents' beliefs about their children can actually influence who the kids become. I don't think that's why the sibling opposite thing happens, but it's definitely a case where we can unwittingly lean into that.
Yes.
Like you were saying, to use your metaphor about steering the sailboat, if we are steering, we can unwittingly be steering the sailboat off course a little bit without realizing that we're doing it. And I think that's not good. What he suggests is, so he says, it's hard for parents to not notice or think about differences between their children. It's only natural. But to help all children succeed, parents should focus on recognizing the strengths of each child and be careful about vocally making comparisons in front of them.
That I can get behind is a very simple rule. Try not to vocally compare your kids, but understand that that is going to be something that happens to them.
It happens to them all the time. And I'm thinking about this now, how often my kids have heard, even if I'm not saying it, somebody else being like, are these kids, like, they're so different, and or everybody's saying it. And it's not, and nobody's meaning anything negative when they say it. They're different in ways. They each have their strengths. But I can think of times that I might have said, oh, this is my shy one, or this is my musically talented one. either then that tells the other kids, oh, you're not the musically, there's only room for one musically talented right. child in this family.
That spot's taken.
Right.
And in my case, like the spot of good student who does great at everything was taken.
Taken like, twice.
It's not, it was taken twice. And so it's not great to be looking for the other of that definition.
Right.
But I'm also not sure how much that came from my parents and how much it came from teachers slash my own brain. Like, I am always so resistant to those articles that are like 62 things never to say to twins. It's like the thing you can't control in the world is what other people say to you.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like you've got to try to attack it from the point of view of like, hey, there are good things about being twins and bad things about being twins. And your whole life, you're going to hear these 62 annoying things about being a twin. But the solution does not seem to be constant articles about 62 things not to say to twins.
Because they're probably going to be said to your twins at some point this week.
Yeah. I mean, I like kind of the pushback of like, stop telling girls they're only pretty. But my daughter, everywhere she goes, people are like, what a pretty dress. You look so pretty. And I just think,
you're going to have to arm her for that.
Yeah.
First of all, is that so terrible? But second of all, the problem for that isn't let me fix the world.
Right. The problem is not me going around and being like, you really shouldn't tell kids they're pretty. It's like, yes, if we could kind of move away as from a society from valuing women primarily by the way they look, I would be all for it. I would be here for it. But I also have to just take my role as like kind of having the conversation of like, yeah, pretty is skin deep, you know?
Looking at these three theories, I kind of think it's a little bit of each, that they are not mutually exclusive, that it's the baby bird being like, I better figure out another kind of nut to eat, so I'm going to go in a different direction. And it's also the non-shared environment. We thought it was the same nest, but it wasn't really exactly the same nest because there were other birds in it when that bird got there.
Right.
And the comparison thing, that as they start to diverge for these reasons, that we totally lean into that and reinforce those rules for well and ill.
For sure.
And when I started this research thinking this wasn't really a thing. I mean, before I even started, like, I'm probably going to find out this isn't really a thing. It's all perception. Okay, so now I see it's a thing. And there are reasons for it. But I do think that part of this beware of comparison thing is beware making it so binary. So a circle has 360 degrees. So if I have one kid who plays three instruments and one kid who plays one, that's not one is musically talented and one is, you know, a dum-dum. That's one's this kind of musically talented and one's, you know, one has an interest in music also. Stop trying to make it so binary. Does that make sense?
That's a really good point. It does. And it reminds me of this improv exercise. I teach improv and one of the exercises we do is called Mr. Personality. And it works like this. Like someone gets sent out of the room and the rest of the class, 15 people, are in the room. And then I walk out and I give the person outside the room a description, like you're jealous. So you're Mr. Jealousy. That person then comes back in the room and answers questions, not about their personality, but just random questions. And it's the class's job to guess the word. So they have to walk like they're jealous, talk like they're jealous, act. Everything they do should just convey jealousy, right? And that's the exercise. And this summer, I've been having a problem with my middle guy about him being extremely... what's the word I'm looking for? If his Mr. Personality word would be like Mr. Greedy almost. Like all he wants to do is like go to arcades and win claw machine things. And like all he wants, he's like making his Christmas list. It's July. Like for some reason, something has gone off in him where like all he thinks about and all he talks about is stuff. And it's driving me crazy. And whenever I suggest an outing, he's like, I don't want to do that. Because it's like he doesn't want to go to the park because he can't win a stuffed animal there out of a claw machine. Like, and I am realizing that I have made him into like Mr. Greedy in my head. Like that's the only thing I can see when I deal with him and talk to him. And I have to break that definition for myself because he's a million things and he's just a little stuck on this thing, but he's also so funny and so cute and so loving and so good with his siblings and some other annoying things. But I think that's an interesting metaphor for me. Like sometimes you just see your kids as like Mr. Grumpy, Mr. Greedy, and Miss Angelic, you know? And I do that with my kids. That's where like the non-shared nest comes in. Like I'm not seeing them the same. And so I might be making some of those things worse by only seeing them as that word.
There's this really hilarious book called Hyperbole and a Half. Have you read this book?
Oh my God, I love that book.
It was a blog that got made into a book, and she does these really crudely drawn cartoons that somehow get at truth better than the most, you know, beautiful painting could ever. And she has a chapter in that book that's about when she was a kid and she liked hot sauce at some point. But she didn't really. Like, she was out to dinner with her parents, and she put hot sauce on something. And they said, that's going to be too hot for you. And she just, out of a need to prove herself, took a bite. It's like, no, it's fine, even though it wasn't. Turns into, like, for Christmas, all she gets is pajamas with hot sauce on them and bottles of hot sauce. And then she gets in this neighborhood sort of contest with some man with a mustache that thinks he can eat more hot sauce than her, and like she beats the guy, but she's this child that's been painted into this corner of I'm the hot sauce person because of, you know, an offhanded thing she said once, and how everybody around her leans in. Isn't this amazing that this is a child who loves hot sauce?
Isn't that funny? Like, it is such an instinct that I don't think we're that aware of. And like, my son and I have just locked horns this summer about, like, I can't stand how the only things you want to do involve toys and prizes. And he's just like, I think it's making him worse.
Mm.
And I don't want my relationship with my son to be like, I think you're greedy. And I don't want his sense of himself to be like, I'm a greedy person.
So I guess the takeaway is we have to let their senses of self develop. They're going to naturally diverge. That's good and healthy, I think.
Right.
But we have to not resist the urge to make them into you're the this one and you're the hot sauce girl and you're the greedy one and you're the shy one and you're the smart one. We have to resist the labels and give them chances to pivot.
And I think what's interesting in that, which I think we forget a lot in this equation, is that I'm going to quote Dr. Phil, which I'm very embarrassed to do, but I'm going to do it anyway.
You know, I'm going to say Dr. Phil, like, he had his points, like in the early days before it was just all people with
long
fingernails.
I'm not a huge fan, but like every once in a while he gets it right.
Yeah.
And he always used to say, like, given an opportunity, kids define things as being about themselves. And that, I think, is a really interesting thing to remember in this whole debate, that like even saying, like, this is my kid who's really musical, the other kid in the room hears, my mom thinks I'm not musical.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're not even thinking about them, like, you have to remember the voice in your kid's head that says, I mean, my kids sometimes say to me now, I'm like, wow, I'm really disappointed in the way you behaved at church today, let's say. And my son will say to me, so you think I'm terrible? And I'm like, no, I'm just very annoyed that you punched a kid next to you during the homily. Like, it has nothing to do with thinking you're terrible. But it's hard. It's easy to forget sometimes, like, our gigantic and kind of scary role that we have. And it's a good thing to keep in mind with this sibling thing, too. That what you say about one, the other kid hears as sometimes a negative about themselves.
Right, right. Or a defining thing about, like, you. So now you have to go over here. That's that part has been taken.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It occurs to me when you were saying, when you look at your siblings, you and your three siblings now as adults, you can't necessarily tell the one who, you know, was a National Merit Scholar and the one who wasn't and the one who went here. Do you feel like there is a sort of commonality among you and siblings that's become more pronounced now that you live your own lives?
Yes.
You have totally non-shared environments now, but there's a sort of core thing about you that is similar.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so. And our identity as siblings is very much less fraught as adults.
Yes.
Like, I only celebrate their triumphs and I only feel bad when they suffer. Like, any sense that we had when we were little kids of, like, everything they do good is somehow taking away from the pie that I don't get a slice of. And sometimes when they hurt, I'm like, yeah, I get a break. Now, I don't know. Like, all of that stuff has kind of burned away. And that's why I think getting obsessive about this stuff is kind of a waste of time and might lead to, like, that kind of parental stress that I don't like to feed into. But I do think watching your definitions of, oh, these are the smart ones, and this one, she just doesn't quite measure up. Like, you could probably lean out from that quite a bit.
The de-identification thing that siblings, especially those close in age, do when they're young is it's while they're still in the same nest. It's someday that is going to fall away. And you're right. You shouldn't stop that from happening. It's fine. But be careful of hardening something that your 7-year-old, don't make them into the hot sauce kid for the rest of their lives just because it was a thing they were interested in for a week because their older brother said, oh, I hate hot sauce, that they feel the need to. My two boys who are very closely spaced, I mean, if the one zigs, the other zags. Like, by definition, you like the Giants, I like the Jets. You like football, I like soccer. But that's something that's, I feel like that's an imperative that's happening right now that might not always be the case. And so
I think it won't be.
So don't lock down on it. So don't lean into it. Let it change too. Let their course shift.
And like we said in the birth order episode, a lot of these birth order things are there. And like, I think maybe you could, as adults, pick out our birth order from my siblings and I. And so some of this stuff is a little bit inevitable. So don't spend your life being like, oh my God, I accidentally complimented my violinist in front of my other one, and now they're going to be a mess for life. Like, it's not that kind of thing. It's just a kind of big picture issue of, okay, can I adjust some ways the way that I am reinforcing expectations? Can I adjust some way that I don't only say to my daughter, you're pretty, and say to my sons, you're smart? Like, I can probably make some of those adjustments, but realize that in the long course of life, it's fine. The sailboat's on course. It's all going to be okay.
I think that's a good metaphor.
Listen, guys, I'm all about my sailboat metaphor today. So we want to know what's going on with your little ones and how they are interacting with their siblings. And we're going to continue the conversation as always on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/WhatFreshHellCast.
We're also on Instagram at WhatFreshHellCast and on Twitter at WFHPodcast.
And Amy is going to put all this research to good use by putting links. I'm sure you have already like gold-plated your links.
I have so, you know, the significance of differences in sibling experiences within the family, like the all the studies that all of this came from. I'm going to put them all up on the show page.
Let me tell you,
I work so hard for you.
Let me tell you, if you have ever thought to yourself, I want to do a deep, 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 deep dive on why my kids are opposites, Amy is here for you with some crazy links.
I forgot to say something earlier I thought this was a really interesting perspective on the opposite thing.
Okay, hit me.
Can I say it before we go? So I was in China with my two sons last summer. And in China, they have, like in the zodiac, they have different times of the year that mean different things.
Okay.
So as it turns out, December 7th, which is my oldest son's birthday, is the day of deepest snow, Da Shui. July 24th, which is almost my younger son's birthday, like a day off, is Da Shu, the day of greatest heat.
Wow, that's fun.
So the tour guide that was with us, when we were like, oh, that's cool, you're deepest snow and you're greatest heat. And he just was sort of like, wait a minute, your two sons, one is deepest snow and one is greatest heat, that you have two sons who are total opposites, because that's another thing Chinese really love is yin and yang. Yes. Coming together, like that's how you want it. You want everything in your life. He couldn't believe that such a family existed in the world, and he just thought my two sons, who are total opposites, was just the greatest honor a parent could have.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So that's, you know, nice. So it's okay. It's all good.
Lean in. All right, guys. That's our episode on opposites, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Margaret, it's an exciting news day.
An exciting news day indeed, Amy.
A few years ago, we launched our first spinoff podcast, Toddler Purgatory, hosted by the hilarious Blair Brooks and Molly Lloyd.
And guess what? Now Blair and Molly are back with their all-new podcast, Unsticking It.
You know Blair and Molly as two busy moms and actors, and somewhere between potty training and the pandemic, they both felt like they lost their creative kaboom.
In their new podcast, Unsticking It, they are going to talk about how all of us can get back to what lights us up after motherhood. Amy, I need this.
Me too. And Blair and Molly will be talking to fellow imaginative minds. We're talking actors, artists, and creators of all kinds about how we can all unstick ourselves from whatever muck we're stuck in.
Follow, subscribe, and listen to Unsticking It wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.